nobody knows where Osprange is. So if I say, this is Harwood Farm and Cidery, located in beautiful Osprange, Ontario, you could say that we're about 1 hour, away from Toronto, or...
Yeah, 1 hour northwest of Toronto.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Hi, this is Val.
Brent.
And Kat.
Of Heartwood Farm and Cidery.
Located in beautiful Osprange, Ontario.
About an hour northwest of Toronto.
And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 141. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rio in Color, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. The kitchen table at Heartwood Farm Cidery is where food is served fresh from the farm, and the business of a farm and life's adventures is discussed. So it makes sense that this week's chat took place at that very kitchen table in the center of the home, really the hearth. There's going to be more on that chat with the folks at Heartwood Farm and Cidery coming straight up. But in the meanwhile, let's check in about some news out and about in Ciderville. I've been getting a lot of emails coming in, and I'm trying to address them as quickly as possible. So if I have not gotten back to you, even if it's been a month, please do not take it personally. It's just that I'm kind of flooded with this, and I'm a podcaster. I'm trying to do my best. Some people think like, oh, you know, this is a full-time radio station, but it's not. It's kind of me and my hub through the grace of listeners helping to support this. So I will get back eventually, but don't take it personally. Please, 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 please. Anyways, I got an email this week from Levi, who is looking for a cider internship. And I thought the best way to address this is with Ciderville, with you, because he has this kind of query that has come across my screen a couple times. And I thought, well, how do we connect people? And certainly the podcast is a good form for that. So I'm going to put this out to Ciderville. If you know of an internship out there, I mean, anywhere in the world, send it my way. Send me an email, ria@ciderchat.com. My first name is spelled R-I-A. And I will start posting this. In fact, if I get enough info on internships or job offerings, I will even put on a page. I think I could fit that in somehow on the ciderchat.com website. So that you, Ciderville, could use that as a resource, kind of like a chit-chat page of sorts. And I will post this query from Levi on the Cider Chat Facebook page so you could see a little bit more about what he's looking for. And this might be a nice way to stay connected because I know it could feel like all over the map. And one thing I do hear from listeners is that the podcast does offer a forum to stay connected around the world. Let's keep that rolling because it's all about staying connected. So best of luck, Levi. I hope this helps. And again, if you have something, send it to Ria, R-I-A, at ciderchat.com, and we'll start connecting the dots here out there in Ciderville. The Big Fish Cider Company, based in Monterey, Virginia, is sponsoring what they are calling the inaugural Mid-Atlantic Amateur Cider Championship. And this is going to be part of the Highland County Fair. And Highland it's a county in that area of Virginia. There's going to be a panel of judges, and they're going to be coming from Castle Hill Cider, Albemarle Cider Works, and, of course, Big Fish. All of these cideries have been on the podcast. So I'm going to put links to their episodes so you could hear. I mean, the amount of skill and education that these folks are doing. I mean, Castle Hill has kevries that they bury in the ground. I mean, this is from like the Georgia Republic, where they would make these giant clay pots and bury it in the ground. I mean, that's what they're doing in Virginia. So if you haven't listened to that episode, you should. And then, of course, you have Chuck Shelton from Albemarle, which is a very well-known cidery, just because everybody loves Chuck and the sister and brother and their connection to all the people in Virginia and what they're doing with Heritage Apples. And then there's Big Fish Cider Company. and they were on the chat too and have been making delicious ciders from these really old trees and scrumpin, and quite the cider maker scene there. And of course, I'm speaking about Kurt Billingsley, who was at one time what he calls an amateur cider maker, a hobbyist, if you will. And then he's gone professional, having this commercial cidery. So they're setting up this competition, and you still have time to send in your cider. If you've been kind of playing around with it, you're going to probably get some really good feedback, and you have the chance to win some cash prizes. And to top it off, there is no entry fee for putting your ciders into this competition. So why not try it? The deadline to get your cider in is August 24th. So you have this small window of opportunity here, and I'm putting it out, and I want to wish you the best because it's fun. Doing little competitions like this is fun, and why the heck not? And certainly the folks down there in Virginia, all the makers and consumers and everyone down in all their little spots of Ciderville down there are having a blast with cider and making some really good stuff. So check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes where you can listen to the folks who are going to be the judges, and also a link on how you could submit your cider today to the Mid-Atlantic Amateur Cider Championship. This past weekend, I was on an adventure with some of my besties, and one of which, who was listening to last week's episode 140, that was with Gavin Robertson talking about the program, the cider making course now at Niagara College, which is in Ontario. That's one of the provinces in Canada, and they are just kicking out the cider making program and meeting the demand and huge demand that's growing in Canada for cider. And one of the things I mentioned on that episode is that I had just set up a little gift, I don't want to give too much away, but something for the travelers who are going on the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy, France with me at the end of September, this coming September. And she was kind of like, you know, the phrase biting at the bit, like just really wanted to know what I was giving folks. And of course, I had to tell her, wish I could share that with you, but I can't right now because I want those folks, you perhaps listening, who's going on the trip to be surprised. Anyways, that did come in the mail this week. So I am now able to pack that away into my suitcase and start getting set for this adventure. In addition, my international SIMS card just came in, something that I shared with the travelers on the best way to stay connected via your smartphone. If you want to do that, or just stay, not necessarily, you could call home with it, you could text, how to text home, and also how to use data when you're traveling on about in Europe, because that could feel kind of like disconnected and lonely. And I really encourage people to stay connected, certainly with home, with the world, and it's fun. You're able to like be somewhere out in the country in Normandy and not be putting your phone bill through the sky in costs, and just feeling competent. I like doing that. That's the way I like to travel. I really geek out on cider, and you should see the way I geek out on traveling. I think it's because I ran these logistical operations for high adventure experiential courses because I was a wilderness instructor for many years, and you did not want to be hanging over in a glacier and not have your act together and know your equipment. Now, I know being in Normandy, France, sipping on a cider or tasting some Calvados and chit-chatting over a cheese plate is nothing like going down a glacier. But you want to know how to maneuver and just feel safe in the world and at ease. So you don't have to think much other than how should I grab this bottle? Should I grab it at the neck, or is it too big because it's like a magnum and I have to pick it up at the base to pour it into my cup? That's about all you want to be thinking about when you're on like a tour, vacation, holiday adventure. So I know I'm going on, but I'm such a geek about this, and I'm really excited. You're just going to have to bear with me, Ciderville, because this is a huge thing to be able to offer to people to go to Normandy and to hang out with Agathe Letier and Philippe and Regis and meet all these people that I absolutely adore. And I want to say that, you know, there's still a little bit of space for that tour. So you can be one of those folks who squeak in and still come along. Just send me an email, re@ciderchat.com, and I could show you what you could do to do that. But there's also going to be some other tours coming up. And one that I am setting up now that should be available before the end of this year, and it's going to be based in the United States. So hang on to your hat for that. I hope to have a beginning announcement for that, perhaps as early as next week or the week after episode. So good stuff happening in Ciderville. We got our Sims card. We got our cider gifts. We're rolling out to Normandy. And you are kind of virtually coming along on that experience, because there is nothing better than going to a cidery and drinking it right there with the makers, which is what this chat is about this week. It's a cider lunch right at the kitchen table with some fun, amazing, thoughtful people. So stay tuned for that. We're going to shoot to our conversation with Heartwood Farm and Cidery, based in Ontario, coming up next. At the website for Heartwood Farm and Cidery, you could read the following. We are humble and careful stewards of a 42-acre farm, where we raise cows, pigs, chickens, and bees, and grow apples, maple trees, and other fruit and nut trees. We have chosen the practice of regenerative farming for our land in an effort to maintain the healthiest soil, water systems, agriculture, and livestock possible. Yep, that about sums it up in that kind of mission statement. But the folks there are even more. They are full of passion that is just absolutely contagious, and the joy is just overpouring. But they're thoughtful, and they're very authentic. They're not kidding themselves that this is hard work. So you're going to hear a little bit about all that and what it's also like to be in business with your life partner, and that would be Brent and Val. In fact, let me say their full names. We have Brent Claussen, who is really the cider maker there, and Val Steinman, who, well, I guess it kind of started with her vision. So we'll also go to that. And then there is Kat Scott, who I happened to get to hang out as a steward recently at the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition in Michigan. She just brought me absolute laughter the whole time being with her. She's a powerhouse in her own right, and all the conversations at this place take place really at the kitchen table, the center, the hub, the focal point, the hearth of all farm homes. So that is where we're going to be sitting at, and then we'll be moving to the cidery. And part of this experience was to have a cider lunch. So you will hear us kind of noshing away as we're going. All the food came from the farm. That's the vegetables and all the meat that we're eating. And I want to tell you, I'm drooling just thinking about it. And of course, it goes so well with the cider that they're making there. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat, because this was brought to you by Field Bird Cider, Ryan Monkman, who brought me on this tour to Heartwood Cidery in Ontario.
Spices.
We're grateful for your company, and happy to share a meal with you folks, and welcome to the country, and grateful for the food. Nate, do you want to get us started and pass that around? Rhea, why don't you take some bread and
eggs on toast, Rhea?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Oh, I should explain too. This is so this is actually the first of the 2017 juice.
Oh, cool.
We're calling it Forest Garden.
Nice, the strong bouquet coming off of there, huh?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I get cider and it's like I'm searching for it.
Right, right.
You know, and then, you know, it's cool, really beautiful.
I feel like this, like, base juice is more interesting than the stuff that we've used for previous mixes.
I really agree.
Is this all me?
Yes, yeah.
I'm going to try a little bit of that. Yeah. Okay, good. Is that pork?
It's actually beef. Grass-fed beef.
Okay,
beef.
All right. Mm.
And there's salt and pepper here, too. There's...
This is the first cider lunch I've had. So this is like a, you know, I don't know, like a marker, the first cider lunch. So that's really cool. I've done cider dinners. We had one last night. The two barrel folks.
Where were you?
We were in St. Catharines.
St. Catharines.
Yeah.
So, and the cidery was?
It's not a cidery. These are barrel specialists.
Oh, barrel specialists.
I would say that, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So,
like they're kind of coopers?
Yeah. A cooper. Yep. Okay. Redu.
Just, we don't need you. Just.
Yeah, Redu. Redu from Louis was based, he's a Frenchman, but he's based in Santa Rosa, California. And then
Thierry.
Thierry,
I work with Thierry a bit on.
Yummy.
Yeast and I just started working with him, but we've known each other for a few years. So I'm yeast and nutrients and oak.
Okay.
And some equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So we were visiting a few wineries with a cooper from Radu.
Mm-hmm.
So then we did a bit of overlap and had dinner together too.
Nice.
Yeah. But this is the first one, and what a beautiful. I want to just let the listeners know. So we're sitting at this long oak table here. In the kitchen, in the heart of Heartwood, really, which is always the kitchen, right?
And, it is.
We have this, well, this beautiful, like...
frittata.
Frittata.
We use that as a word to just describe anything that is basically egg-based.
Mm-hmm. Egg-based, just with some nice vegetables in it, and some bread, and some of your own beef. It's just, like, perfect, and cider. I couldn't be happier... I could be anywhere in the world, but this is like exactly where I want to be right now with this kind of like layout. It's awesome. It's so great to see you again, all of you. And show for me, and I hope like the listeners get like, you know, it's like this amazing world of cider. It's so connected, and everybody's just so passionate about, you know, it begins with the land. And then, you know, everything you're talking about, you know, forest cider, and your passion's really profound that way. So, I want to be able to share, like, the story of Heartwood and just a little bit of the beginnings and making sure that we have time to talk about cider, too, within that. But can we start there a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it seems like you've been here for a while doing this, mm-hmm. right?
The story of Heartwood has to start with Val.
Yeah, it was kind of my deep yearning to get out of the city and go back to the country where I grew up in a rural community, so... Without really knowing what we were getting into, Brent agreed to leave the city because he could tell it was important to me. So about 14 years ago, when our kids were really little and still needed a lot of attention,
They actually still need a lot of attention.
They still, but they add a lot of value. They do a lot of work.
They do.
Seems like a pretty good guy.
Yeah, he's been awesome. But we moved here in this land, 42 acres of diverse forest, wetland, pasture, meadow. It was actually not really a farm. There was a local cash cropper that cash cropped a bunch of the acreage. But we were the first ones that actually lived here and wanted to farm on it. So started the journey into mostly working with livestock. And grazing. I was really interested in...
Wow, go right to animals first. Wow.
Yeah, that was my passion from my youth. And so learning about naturally raising many different species of livestock on the same piece of land with the intention of regenerating the soils. And our hilly lands had been, you know, lost a lot of topsoil on the ridges and the organic matter was low. And so... after lots of years of cash cropping, so we planted them to pasture and then started learning how to do managed grazing and moving fences. And
how many heads of cattle do you have?
Well, at this point we have in the summer when we're grazing, we just have a small herd of about 20. 15 to 20, mm-hmm. some cows and calves and some mm-hmm. yearlings that we add to our herd in the summer to mm-hmm. to finish on grass and to do work to regenerate the soil in our pasture. And we've had in the past herds of goats as well. But when sort of 6 or 8 years ago when Brent started planting fruit trees, the goats kind of were a bit of a problem.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So for other reasons too, the goats are no longer here on the farm, but we also do pastured pigs and pastured poultry. We have a team of farm workhorses that I do some of the farm work with.
Mm. What kind of horses?
Percheron and Belgian Cross.
Nice.
So we started mostly because I was really intrigued to learn all this stuff and figure out how to create an integrated farm system that mimics mm-hmm. nature. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, Brent would come home from his day job in the city and I'd boss him around and get him to help me with things that I couldn't do by myself. And then I think it was like the best version of the midlife crisis anybody could ever hope for in one spouse. Brent decided to he wanted to learn about fruit trees. He wanted to learn about planting, tending, grafting, pruning. Mm. And so that year we took...
I still suck at all of those.
Not from the cider. The cider's not saying that, man. You're doing well. So
this year is midlife crisis one. Keep your counters going because it's...
Here, this
out of the mouths of babes.
Yeah.
Keep your counters going.
Well, that happens. That's a story. That's a story.
Crises, it's like danger and opportunity.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Oh my goodness. Yes, it is.
But what's it said? A crisis?
Maybe
a thing to
maybe
waste.
It's a midlife opportunity.
Yeah. 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 I think that's right. It's
change for sure, right?
Yeah.
So there you are.
Well, sometimes when you're cracked open by the crisis, new things can bloom, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. wouldn't have otherwise had the space, because if you're in a rut, things don't bloom freshly necessarily. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's when the farm became an even more beautifully diverse place with, you know, the first little round of mm-hmm. forest garden that we planted mm-hmm. with a community of 20 friends and family here to help us put 45 trees in the ground, mm. you know, of different kinds, like kind of the Noah's Ark of orchards.
So it was apple trees and peach trees?
Oh boy, back then, I haven't had much luck growing peaches. We actually got a crop mm-hmm. off one tree last year, but that's it. So mm-hmm. I think we're just not... I mean, I know that you know the warmth is kind of moving its way north, yeah. and we may be in peach growing territory in the next years. But right now, it doesn't seem
not
to work
yet.
Very well.
Right.
So I did plant some peaches and apricots and stuff like that. But I've never had much luck with the stone fruits. But we planted some cherries. The mm-hmm. cherries have been pretty good. Apples, pears, Asian pears.
Have you considered a cherry cider? I guess we just don't have enough crop for that.
This year we might.
Well, this year we might, yeah.
Go and look at the fruit
yeah.
set on.
We had a really good trees. Fruit set on a couple of the trees, so. So, yeah. And then and we've expanded that to include nut trees, so hazels and heart nuts, and even some, we're trying to grow some northern pecans, see if that might work.
Wow.
So
interesting.
And all kinds of interesting, wacky things, like hascaps and...
And pawpaws. And,
yeah. And,
right.
And
sea, right.
Sea berry.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
but I think, I mean, that sort of more, like at a certain point, we start wondering what we're going to do with all this fruit. And we do manage to an organic specification, although we're not certified, but that's, I mean, those are certainly the principles that we mm-hmm. operate under. And it's
you
just
can
very
feel
difficult.
It here.
Can you?
Feel, oh, yeah. I mean, this is like happy land.
I mean, just the messiness of it. It's
well, no, not messy. Just cider, you should know that this is not a messy place at all. It's beautiful coming in here. But, you know, some people go for organic certification, and you could kind of do that in all the hoops, and that's a cool thing. But that's a great thing about having the opportunity to come and visit a cidery and feel it, because So kind of being that beacon in that way, I want to say I really felt that as soon as we were just going down the driveway.
Hmm.
You could feel the vitality here, and that's really important.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm.
But you know that already, of course. I don't have to speak into the choir.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice to have that affirmed, because we do tend to see, sort of obsess over the rough edges, right? But I mean, life doesn't often shape itself around sort of neat and tidy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, so in one of the I think the symptoms of organic fruit production is just that it's really, really difficult to produce fruit that's kind of grocery store ready, right? And so I think it was kind of, you know, out of the scratching our heads thinking, so what are we going to do with all this? That we started thinking, why don't we think about what we can do with the juice, right? And I mean, neither of us was a particularly big cider drinker, 5 years ago.
There weren't many choices in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of choices. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really changed and continues to do so. But I think we tried pressing a bit of juice and making some cider and just found that it was surprisingly easy to make a drink that you would actually want to consume, that we wanted to consume. And so I guess that's kind of where it started. And then, I had some circumstances.
How were you learning that? You just kind of like winging it, or?
The internet.
Internet, yeah.
Well, there's some of that. There are books. When I got a little bit more serious, I took a course down at Cornell, taught by Peter Mitchell.
Mm, okay.
So
there you go.
Yeah, it's kind of like the sort of the cider makers 101 sort of thing, right? And I actually did that course with Mark Skinner, who you're about to meet, and David Baker, who I don't know if you would know him from
I met him a week ago.
So both great guys, and we really. You know, you really kind of establish a sense of community, right? So it's a learning community, mm-hmm. right? And it's sort of a floundering community as well, right? Mm-hmm. everybody's got challenges and successes, mm-hmm. and are happy to share those.
Right.
So yeah, how do you learn? I mean, I think there's that kind of structured learning. There's the book learning. There's the stuff you can get on the internet, which is amazing. Wait till I show you my chiller. It works like a charm. It turns
cool,
out.
I can't wait. All right.
It looks like a beast color? From the
You learned that on YouTube
depths.
To build it? Awesome. Love it.
But then it's a lot of being pulled up by people that just know more than you do. Like Ryan, for example, right? And before meeting Ryan, I met Tark, who runs Rebel. Mm-hmm. Cider in Guelph, and so he was a great support and just a guy who was willing to answer questions mm-hmm. at any time. And then and then just the other newbies, and also I should say also some of the really established players, right, like Tom Wilson from Spirit Tree, who kind of was happy for me to come and help out in the cidery a few days, mm-hmm. and just that was my first exposure to actual kind of production scale, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nick Sutcliffe of Palmies. I mean, he hasn't been a mentor so much as just a guy that is always there to answer a question or, give you some feedback or whatever. So I think that's probably the long answer to your question about where the learning comes from. And I will say that I've found that, like, probably 25% of the learning curve actually has anything to do with what's in the glass with cider, and 75% is production, right? It's cleaning, it's equipment, it's
janitorial, custodial stuff.
Yeah, but also right now I'm kind of there's some processes that I'm moving from being really small scale to just small scale, and even that step has its challenges, right?
So where are you in that scale? How much are you producing?
So we have 15,000 liters. That's our 2017 pressing, mm-hmm. of which, as I said, this is the first.
Mm-hmm.
And the infrastructure, I assume we'll walk out there at some point.
Yeah.
The infrastructure that you'll see is kind of like it's built to that scale, right? So it's teeny, teeny, tiny. I think what we want to do is not just make lots and lots of cider. I mean, we're still on the orchard and we're still on the livestock. And I think probably more than anything, what we want to do is bring all those component pieces together for people who visit the farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there's really something poignant that sits at that intersection of all of those raw materials and how those things come together to create, you know, meals. And not just meals, but to create community around the kitchen table, right? So somehow trying to think about how we can create experiences that really animate those connections, right? Mm-hmm. So cider becomes really just it's sort of a prop in the larger drama.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the space that we're exploring and trying to discover.
So cider would be kind of one of those value-added products for your farm.
Yes.
What are you currently doing to kind of sustain your farm? Do you have like farm shares or?
We don't have a CSA.
Mm-hmm.
We have done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. I mean, we've been selling sort of beef and pork.
Where people like chicken. Will say we want to get a half of that
beef, exactly.
And then you bring it out somewhere else to get rendered up.
That's right.
And
yep.
then they'll
yep.
get that. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And that, I mean, that's been the mainstay of the farm to date, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we've added the cider. And the next thing we want to do is add, you know, what right now what we're calling sort of tasting and tour, right? So this would be an opportunity for people to come out and over maybe a 2-hour period kind of experience all the different zones on the farm and what they offer. And then a time of bringing that all together in tastings, in sampler menus, right? So people can kind of say, okay, I saw it out there, and now it's actually going in my mouth, and I'm really engaged with this community of people who's also here discovering these
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and so, I mean, there's an economic component to that too, which we're kind of, you know, sort of thinking
working
our way through
out, yeah.
at this point. Yeah.
Well, I think that's constantly what faces a farmer. Is how, you know, the more diversified I think the modern farmer is,
yeah,
the more you're going to be able to like kind of meet the changing culture that's surrounding you.
Right.
And
right.
Teaching, I mean, that's like a multifaceted. You get to like teach and get people connected to the farm who know nothing about
right,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you add these value-added products.
Right, right.
So
right.
when you say like, so it'd be like the beef, it'd be the cider, it would be the vegetables.
Yeah, and in our community, we've also got, like, we have neighboring farmers that
that
do eggs and, you know, other kind of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
The asparagus is from a farm just down the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's also an opportunity to say this is not just about us. I mean, this
mm-hmm.
is what the land has to offer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of that's here and some of that's in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, they're kind of two big sort of watchwords that we kind of hang on, right? One is transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're kind of in the business of stewarding the transformation of, you know, sunlight to grass, of grass to muscle tissue, of muscle tissue to beef, to pork, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of sunlight to soil, to tree, to branch, to fruit, to cider, right? All these things are... It's this very rich tapestry of things that are just constantly becoming something richer and more interesting. And so, I mean, from a purely scientific standpoint, it's fascinating to watch that and to learn about it. But from a cultural standpoint, the humans are also, you know, kind of, you know, being transformed in their experience of these things as well,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's kind of how that piece comes in. And so transformation is one, and connection is the other, right? So I think it's just a malaise of the modern era that we live these kind of disconnected lives from other people, from nature, from
right.
animals, from the
right.
systems, from the systems that actually
mm-hmm.
sustain us,
mm-hmm.
right? And so to create a little tiny context where people can actually experience connection in a very direct way, you know, seems like it would be worth doing, you know? And so that's...
Yeah.
So those are kind of the two
yeah.
the two things that we think of, the two words that we come.
You're at this like forefront of a potential friggin' unbelievable cider boom, which, you know, really will depend upon how much the consumers in in Ontario get what cider is. But, you know, it's a perfect product to do farm to table.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. You know, people are looking at like orchard dinners, you know, out in Monterey Bay in California. Starting to lead cider tours, you know, to bring people to locations. It's one of the reasons why I'm here in Ontario, too. You know, I'm hoping, like, you know, in conjunction of talking to you folks, but to be looking at, you know, what would it be like to bring a cider tour, you know, to offer that, because that's the number one way I see cider growing. I mean, we could all be, like, really happy and cool. Like, we all love cider. I don't really need to be convinced, right?
Yeah.
We're all in the choir, you know, hanging out in Michigan with Kat. You know, it's like, we know we love cider. But the rest of the world doesn't really understand, like, what you're doing and what, how much care and knowledge that you've had to garner over the years as an orchardist, which is a whole different skill level than raising beef cattle. But it's integrating it into the farm, too. So you are on, like, the amazing point in the history of Ontario, pioneering. I mean, it's incredible where you're positioned right now. From my vantage, seeing that, I mean, this is the time to, like, really get those ideas solid. So I heard that you're starting to do some rebranding of your cider a little bit, right? You've been, how recent have you been selling cider?
About a year.
About a year.
Yeah, we were licensed almost exactly a year ago.
And I remember meeting you at CiderCon, and I saw your label with the little bee on it and the little the comb of the honey. So yeah, you raise bees here too.
So we have friends that raise bees here.
So you have that. So that's like a total, you know, little hemisphere of cider here.
It's kind of interesting you say that, because it's like it's beautiful and it's messy. It's simple and it's really complicated.
There's nothing wrong with messy. You know, I'd rather be in a house that's messy than a house that's really, like, clean and tidy. To
me, you've come to the right place.
Messy is safe. Typically, control is not safe. But I've built my career on that, and that's a whole different piece. But I'd rather have messiness and kind of letting it go. And,
But I guess, you know, like, back in the day, farms were exactly like that. Of course you had your bees, and you had your orchard, and you had your animals, and you had your crops, and you had your vegetables, and you had all that stuff, right? That's what a farm was. And and actually, the majority of people, that was what they did, and that's how they lived, right? And I think we have largely, I mean, in the ways that agriculture has been radically transformed in the past decades, I think we've largely forgotten what it means to be able to manage that diversity. And so what we find, like, you're right, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous to think about all those components on a single piece of 42 acres. Like, that's just wow, like blammo. And yet it's what we find is it's almost impossible to manage. Right, like, it's almost impossible to have the expertise required, to have the human power required, and to have enough time required to manage these things.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, it feels like it's a tough thing to
wrangle. Exhausting. You know? It's exhausting.
But that's actually what I find most energizing. I realized somewhere along my journey as a becoming farmer that the thing that I loved most was not one particular species of animal or one particular enterprise on the farm. What I loved was this incredible, interconnected, complex farm system that I could only really set in motion, hopefully learning from sort of natural systems wisdom, and setting it in motion and trusting that I would be able to observe and learn as I went. Is actually the thing that most inspires me. The thing I love the most about my job is that it is never the same twice, and it's always requiring me to think agilely, to solve new problems, but to be amazed. Like, I just, like, so I experience the messiness some days as being overwhelming and sometimes frustrating. And when, you know, you're working with living things, whether it's children or livestock or plants or weather systems, they're not meant to be controlled. And if we go in to our farming and our food production thinking that we're going to be in control, that hubris will allow us to create something. And we've seen lots of examples of that. But once you're seduced by the magic of sort of the complex and remarkable
mm-hmm.
kind of miracles that transform what nature wants to bring to us, then you kind of have to give yourself over to not being in control. Mm-hmm. And it's actually that is what kind of connects me deeply to spirituality, to mystery, to even the notion of the divine, right? If you want to mm-hmm. talk about that. So it's hard and it's messy, and yet it's like a lot of the things that are poignant in life, right? The measure of joy is equal to the measure of deep, visceral, sometimes sorrow mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. confusion or vulnerability. So mm-hmm. I think that's part of what we want to invite people to maybe rediscover or to reframe, that those experiences that we have been kind of taught to avoid as much as possible, the ones that make us feel vulnerable, either in relationships or in our work, or the things that do look messy, but they're authentic, they're real, they're deeply rooted to natural processes. Those are the things that when we lean into them, they give back more richly than we would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, I never feel good about it when my cattle fencing is, you know, just pushing the edges a little bit, because there's a great patch of grass, and if I just put my portable fencing out there and then, shit, the cows step outside and they destroy one of Brent's trees, and that's never a happy thing. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it romantic, but I think we have to get over our sense of how much control we have. And I feel like if we can reinvigorate those adaptive muscles in our beings, that'll help us with the future, because we know the future is going to look different than the present, mm-hmm. and we don't know how different it's going to be. We get glimpses with climate change or whatever, but I think to be agile and adaptive and to let go of our sense of control, those are good things to experience. So if people coming here can feel a bit of that vitality in the midst what might look less manicured but is beautiful, then mm-hmm. maybe it'll awaken something like it does for us every day, awakens a new sense of the possibility.
Well, it's hard work. Farming's hard work, there's no doubt. But everything that you're saying here is exactly the way of the cider maker. You know, that there's no control. Like, the cider makes itself. You got to go with it. And it gets chaotic. And if you're doing wild fermentation, or, you know, you could control. And Brian's sitting here across. And I know in what you've studied, like, you could really, like, you know, define that cider in a certain way. There's no doubt, right? People regiment ciders and package it. And you could expect that same cider every single time. But the beauty of, like, a location like this is that your size lends itself to, like, a certain kind of exploration that people would just be lusting for in the cider community. You could kind of, you know, go with the ebb and flow and explore. So chaos happens. Chaos happens, and I think that's really well said.
It's kind of the natural state, right?
That's the
second law of thermodynamics.
I was telling Ryan, I wrote a book called Leading Chaos, so I'm very deep into, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyways, that's another topic, but yeah, chaos is a topic
like
I've been part of.
Profound metaphor for yes. the way we think, leading chaos.
Leading, instead of having it lead you,
yeah,
you have a choice. Chaos could lead you.
Yes.
Which it does often, and comes in our life in many forms, or you could choose to lead it. Because chaos happens, so
uh-huh.
you know, and I think there is a choice, and that's what it's all about, is choosing, you know, where you're going to go, and not, you know, you get worn out. I mean, having met many farmers, knowing farmers quite well, and being part of that community for many years, I hear you, you know, but you know, we came down this road and it was like absolutely beautiful, and I was like so stoked having met you. You know, there was something charming about where you were at that tasting room at CiderCon. It's like they were on the edge. I remembered you folks, you know. I remember, you know, I was talking to Brent the whole time, and I remember you, there was another woman standing with you. Was that Kat?
Oh, yeah.
Was that Kat? Yeah.
She had much shorter hair.
That's so funny, because, okay. And I just remember all these, like, cool people from Ontario. Isn't that sweet? And they have, like, a bee and this, like, really delightful cider. So, you know, it gives me a lot of hope. It just is like absolutely freaking fantastic to be here. You know, it just, it makes me realize all the goodness that's in the world. Mm. You know, there's like good people everywhere. And I always like to know who's across the border. Yeah. I, you know, it's important. We need to like know our neighbors. And that's, I feel like with the podcast, we get to know who our neighbors are around the world. Mm. And everybody who's connected to cider, in my experience, and that, you know, I don't want to exclude the farmers and all that, but those are farmers too, more or less, are really good people. You have to be. Because it's about the apple.
Yeah.
It's like the original fruit, you know? Pears and palms. Right. That's beautiful stuff, you know? Those tears of joy to my heart. So, you got a lot going on here. You know, I probably came in at a point where, you know, you are like bucking it up here to get ready for this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And your back just went on. I mean, that's a lot.
That's kind of funny.
We're trying to figure out what the cosmic lesson is in that we're supposed to be learning.
Yeah, you're doing really...
It hasn't happened for years. Well, it's been better than it was. But
yeah,
it's humbling. Like, that's a lot of the lessons are...
It's tough.
To be humbled and to let go of thinking that we need to have everything just right and to trust that what unfolds will be maybe more interesting than... It would have been if we would have been on top of it all.
Well, that's how you got here, right?
Yes.
This guy kind of changed his job and coming here and creating something that, you know, Ryan telling me, you know, it's just his love for this place and you as a community here on this beautiful piece of property is just really deep. And so, you know,
Ryan said he loved this place.
And you guys. He loves you guys. Because really a place is often all about the people.
Yeah.
Right? And so what you're bringing here is really amazing.
But, you know, there is a... I think there's even... I agree. At every level of interaction, whether it's business meetings or friendly kind of cider sharing or, you know, time at the bar and conversation, the people in the industry are they're cool people and they're good, generous people. Mm-hmm. They're big-hearted people, right? But I think there's also kind of an undercurrent beneath that of, you know, like we were talking about sort of transformation and connection and, mm-hmm. you know, the quest for something that's really like, has enduring meaning in life.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a bunch of people, not all of them, but I think there are a bunch of people in the cider community that are also tapped into that. And you're one. I mean, that was clear from some of our early email exchanges, right? And you know, the guys down at Finger Lakes, they're in that zone, right? And so, I mean, those connections become even more profound, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's cool.
I think the thing that surprised me, because I was really involved in the ecological farming community, small, new farmers, really philosophically principled people and mm-hmm. salt of the earth and, you know, like really smart and the conferences and everything that I connected with in that community was really inspiring and uplifting, supportive. And I have a pretty earnest conviction that I need to do my part to be part of changing the world, right? Social transformation to kind of help our communities become more resilient, blah, blah, blah. And I've always struggled to figure out what my role is. I never expected that would happen through making booze, right? Like that it kind of unfolded surprisingly. And it was because Brent was kind of following his own passion. And we together decided that this was part of the whole story. There wasn't a cidery by itself and a farm mm-hmm. by itself, but the cidery was birthed out of the land and the diversity and the farm experience. And so what I have been amazed by is that there's something about the idea of craft cider that opens people up. When they come to your farm, your market stand at the farmer's market, or they come to the farm store and they're going to taste something that is fermented by these, you know, simple little Saccharomyces yeast, but they're like delighted and they're like open to hearing you share a little bit about the poetry behind it in a way that somebody coming to pick up their dozen eggs and their kale might also be. But I don't know, there's something about cider that is associated with celebration. It's associated with joy and indulgence, and maybe also the titillating side of what gives us pleasure in life that's also sometimes dangerous, right? And when people get close to that edge, there's potential to, you know, like all bets are off. Alchemy happens, magic happens. And I never would have expected that. And I feel that this marriage of farm and cidery and then inviting people to explore that has way more possibility to do what I always hoped I would be able to do, which was invite people into a space of, you know, being reawakened to connection with the web of life or whatever. So, yeah, so it's kind of nice when things happen that way. And it is a fun thing. Boy, cider conferences, like, so much fun. Everything in the cider scene is fun. Cause
it's true.
People are...
But we're creating our own scene. I think that's what's unique about it. Like, you know, we have some of these other models in the booze scene, right? Spirits or in wine or beer. But cider is so new. It's like the new puppy that came in who just wants to play. Like your little dog coming out is just like, I want to bark. And I just want to bark loudly. And look at me, look at me, look at me. And have fun. And you know what? Come with me. Come with me. Come with me to my side of the river, you know? Yeah. Hang out with me and let's do that. It crosses borders in the way that the apple has been doing way before any of us came along.
Yeah.
But one of the other interesting things that I think we've experienced too, so this is now kind of, I guess, steering the conversation more in the direction of the cider specifically, is that, you know, like cider is one of these things that, like, well-made doesn't need any other interventions, right? I mean, take the apples, let them ferment, and then sometime later, drink it, you know? On the other hand, it's kind of a great blank slate if you want to sort of try adding other things, right? I mean, hops and berries and botanicals and, you know, other kind of spices, you know? And so I think it's a remarkably versatile drink in that way, that it can stand on its own two feet like a good bottle of wine can, or it can kind of be this substrate, right, that you use as a way of experimenting with other things, which is kind of fun for us because, you know, in our you probably tried the Current Affair at CiderCon. I don't know if you did.
This is the one you're referring to. This is our Ego's Badass, which is the one.
Right, Ego's Badass. That's right. Yep.
Most of our ciders have maple syrup because we have a sugar bush, so it's mostly. Any back sweetening is with maple syrup. This one's
but not
with honey.
That one, right? That was with honey, yeah.
And we have honey on the farm. We grow cayenne peppers.
And that's
we grow
current, black currants. Current Affair, yeah.
Right.
I don't think I had the Current Affair, but they were in both small bottles.
Yeah, we didn't have the Current Affair there. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think we were between batches.
You got a sip?
Yeah, heck yeah.
In terms of like the dynamic that happens at this kitchen table and at this farm, there's so much space to just be allowed to be curious and to explore. And both Val and Brent are amazing teachers who've thus far lived like incredible lives and have allowed me to be a piece of that at this point.
So thank you for all that. But you're selling yourself a bit short, I think. I mean, like Kat is kind of the one who's most likely to be out there at the cider bar late at night, trying the new sours, you know, kind of like finding the edges of where people are at and then bringing that back to sort of saying, you know, here's maybe some things that we should be experimenting with this year, right? So I think that's really cool because, you know, whenever you're creating something, you're looking for content and inspiration, right? And so...
thanks, Bryn.
So you bring that, which is great.
Now that you had a little nosh and a little sip of cider at the kitchen table at Heartwood Farm and Cidery, we're going to head over to the actual cidery itself, which means that we leave the house and we walk across a dirt kind of parking area, you know, landing area, to the actual cidery itself to give you a little sense of the place there and how he has it set up. Because I know a lot of you cider makers out there, whether you are hobbyist or commercial, are always kind of hankering for this little inside scoop. So let's head over there right now.
This is a very modestly appointed cidery. So
You're being modest now. I just want you to know some people are in like 10 by 10 buildings that I've been to.
All right.
So this is pretty spacious. This, there you go. What's the square foot on this?
About 600 or so.
600 square feet. So that's really nice. Pretty, like I'm going to say, 10 foot ceilings? Nine foot.
Now this is the tank room.
Tank room's back here. Look at the tank. Holy smokes. So
we just built this last December, just in time to get our juice in. So it was a bit of a panic.
Yeah.
But it all came together in the end.
Bottles over there, are you handballing?
Yeah. Yes. Everything's handballed.
Okay. So let's describe these tanks. You said how many liters were they?
So these are each 6,000.
Each 6,000 liters.
Yeah, so we filled these up 5,000 each last fall.
Mm-hmm.
So we were fermenting 15,000. You know, after racking, that'll go down to probably 14-ish that we'll process. And actually, this one has been racked now in a couple of tanks in here and filling up these.
I haven't seen these kind of tanks. What are they called? They're big. They're plastic, right?
Yeah, it's plastic. It's HDPE plastic. And they're actually not designed for enological purposes, but there are a lot of cider makers that use these. One of the things that we've learned about cider is that, unlike beer, where you buy your stainless steel infrastructure, but you're running new product through there every 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
This stuff is staying here basically all year.
Mm.
You know, you get to use it once.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of outfitting the entire operation in metal when your product only runs through it once in a year is just, it's hard to return.
Yeah, I know, I hear you. I hear you, yeah. Yeah, great. So you have a little AC in here just to manage the temperature?
Just to manage the temperature.
What's the temperature that you're keeping this room?
16.
16, which goes to Fahrenheit.
Oh, 60 Fahrenheit.
60, so okay. Here, yep, right. All right. So, and you have different names for your tanks?
Yes, now I actually bought these from, Nick Sutcliffe and Lindsay at Palmies. Whoops.
Oh, okay.
And so they named them. And I don't know what the history of the names are, but...
All right. Well, good luck, tanks. How do you say that?
Eloy?
Eloy? Cloudbreak?
Rincon. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
It works for me.
Yeah.
The other thing to just connect the stories here is that Ryan helped me. So there are three tanks there. And each one, they all have the same, or we started with the same juice mix in each of them. And Ryan helped me kind of come up with a strategy for yeasting those differently.
Ryan. Oh, Ryan Monkman.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So one of them was...
nice, Ryan.
One of them we did with DB10, and the other one we did with X16, and the other one was a Toral Spora QA23 mix. And I have wondered, I've never done a Toral Spora fermentation before. He suggested I might want to try it. And I do think that it is, you remember inside Nathan was saying he feels like the juice this year is better, is more interesting than the juice last year. And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's partly coming from, you know, trying different yeasts to bring out different characteristics and then blending those in. So.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit of experimentation. I don't see any barrels in here. Is there any like...
No, not yet.
I like that.
Would love to do some barrel aging.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that was up on the whiteboard in the kitchen.
Okay.
So you got to start somewhere, right?
Yes, you do. And, get your systems all set, and then you could add those other elements in.
Yeah.
So what was this building originally? Like
it was a dilapidated garage.
A dilapidated.
So that wall basically was caving in.
Mm-hmm.
This was a dirt floor. So we excavated some of the floor, poured concrete, shored up that wall, insulated the whole thing.
And you insulated it. What's that stuff that you spray on there in the walls?
It's like cellular foam, I think, or whatever.
And it stays warm enough in here, because you were up in Canada, so we always think, oh my goodness, this is like polar bear.
If you turn to your right.
Yeah.
That's the in-floor heating system.
Oh, you have radiant.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that
so
would
I
do it.
So I can keep these
Lovely.
Rooms, like in the wintertime, you know, during fermentation, I can keep these at, you know, 10 or 11 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever that is, probably mid-40s.
Mid-40s.
Late 40s.
Yeah, like okay.
That enables me to work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I was just telling Ria about the sort of the strategy we had on yeasting the different tanks.
Because that guy was helping you out a little bit over there.
because he was helping me, and now and Mark and I are kind of sharing equipment.
Right over there, some windswept.
Yeah, so it's just like that's what you're saying before, right? It's a real kind of community sort of feel.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's a nice setting, nice place to work. Good vibes in here, and we got little carboys over here. Little veritable tank. And what was he said something about, oh, wait till you see it in there. This.
Yeah, so the chiller, which is connected to an air conditioner to chill.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How the heck does that... Hey, Brent, can you come over here and help us understand what the heck?
Yeah, so it's down to 2 degrees.
So, nice, yeah. Nathan was in here showing me. Yeah.
Oh, he was?
He's psyched, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a homemade chiller. So basically, you take an air conditioner and you saw it in half, and you put the cooling fins in the thermos of glycol, and then you put the radiant fins outside that, and then you manage the whole thing on a temperature relay. So as soon as the glycol gets to -2, the air conditioner turns on, cools it to -5, and then shuts off.
Is it kind of like a cool bot?
Except a CoolBot would actually be a little bit cooler because this is just a power relay, so it actually turns the air conditioner on.
Right.
Whereas the CoolBot just tricks the sensor into saying, you know, it's warmer than you think it is.
Yeah, right. Right.
So.
And you saw that on YouTube.
Yeah. So.
I'm wondering what you would like to do, an air conditioner cooler setup, YouTube. Google that.
It takes some effort, but you can find this.
I know. Right? I love it. I love it.
This, the bottling assembly, that's Nat West's design.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
It's funny because at CiderCon, the same day that I met you, I went over to his thing and I said, I just want to thank you for publishing those plans because that's just working so well for me. He said, you're the third person in the last hour that said that.
Nice, good.
But I think, one of the things about being small scale and deliberately small scale is you kind of have to... You have to DIY some of this stuff, right?
Definitely.
You just can't afford to buy everything.
No.
Brand new.
Yeah.
I couldn't DIY that, so.
And you know, it's kind of like you'd know how to work your system in a way, and it gives you your cider house yeast profiles that are really unique unto your own little cidery, with all the different contraptions that you're bringing in, an old AC unit from God only knows where, you know.
Gigi, $200.
There you go, right? Yeah, that all makes a big difference.
Significantly cheaper than
8,000. Yeah, yeah.
So this is all that it is here, right? Is there anything else? Okay.
Well, perfect. So the next thing to look at would be the, you can see the tasting room in process.
I would love to see the tasting room in process, sure. These guys are getting ready for the weekend, a big group of people coming in here. Yeah. This is kind of like a 20-foot long room.
It's 23 by 13 or 14.
Nice,
we have a friend who's kind of like a custom wood guy. And so he just came with a saw and he just scavenged stuff from the farm. So that's barn board.
Yeah.
Came off the side of the building.
Nice.
The cherry there is old stair treads that were just lying around from a previous renovation.
Sweet.
And he found salvaged some ceiling tin. Yeah, I did a nice
Very job. Cool. Windows all around, and you got some nice high tables for people, and they'll be able to come here and be able to buy a pint. I don't know. How are you selling that? Like 12-ounce pasters or something like that? What can folks expect?
Yeah, so we have just received a by-the-glass license, so that allows us a retail license. We can give a sample in support of making a retail decision, right? So that's just a little, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they actually specify what a sample is, but it's small. By the glass means you can pour up to 5 ounces. Is that right?
Mm. Yeah, 5 ounces only. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so 5 ounces.
Under the Fruit Winery Act, so it's based on what a winery would be able to do by the glass.
Which is a little bit different.
But they don't tell you can only give one glass of cider.
That's true. Right. That's true.
But we can only, the other thing is we can only sell our own stuff.
Right.
It's kind of a drag, because it'd be lovely to... Be able to have other people's, like at Finger Lakes, right?
Stepping stone.
The whole community is there, right?
Right, stepping stones. So you get the first stepping stone and the next one, then you'll know what to tell the government that you need, and I'm sure the government will.
You were kind of rhapsodizing about the cider community in Ontario, and there are some things that are really nice about it. The regulatory environment is not one of those things. Like, it's the the regulators are not, they're not trying to help the industry thrive. Mm. They're not trying to do things that make the industry more successful and interesting and diverse. That's happening in spite, I would say, in spite of
the government regulation. Well, I would say that's true probably everywhere else around the world. So you are not alone.
Maybe.
So just hang in there.
But you know what's unique about Ontario is that the LCBO has a monopoly on the distribution of liquor.
I heard that.
And so
which is a government-run organization.
It's a government-run organization that, while on the one hand, the government is supposed to be about economic vitalization and that sort of thing, on the other hand, it runs a monopoly business.
Yeah.
And monopoly businesses, they don't give up power very, very easily, right? So,
well, you know, that's why it's so important to get the consumers educated about cider, because they will become your voices.
Advocates
on the streets.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe.
And a little bit of everybody. You need everybody doing that. This is a really sweet setup in here. That's gonna be your chalkboard in the back.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to cast forward too.
I love it.
So
it's gonna happen.
Kind of
it's gonna happen.
Going away.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much transportation can take
place. I'm sure that a lot has happened in a very short amount of time here, right?
Yeah, it has.
So,
and you know, there are phases where you feel like things aren't moving forward, right? Because in the winter, some of the work couldn't be done, so you're sitting and waiting and waiting.
Right.
And the time keeps going, and the deadline keeps moving forward. And then, in the last couple of weeks,
boom, shakaboom.
A scurrying. Boom, because shakaboom.
Yeah. No, I could imagine. This is going to be gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, cozy, intimate. Yeah. We've got... Our friend, who's the beekeeper, fine furniture maker. He's also bringing tomorrow a table that he made with all kinds of wood. So I think mostly from our farm, but maybe also, like, this is an apple tree that was on his grandparents' farm.
That table.
He has memories of being
beautiful.
You know, playing under the tree as a little
goodness.
Kid, building forts. As
that's
a slightly
all one
older
piece
kid.
Of apple
yeah.
wood.
Yeah.
That is like almost 2 feet, right? 24 inches. Holy smokes.
And the grain
is big ass apple tree.
Wow.
Yeah. And he and his wife, who's also a friend and keeps bees right with him, they got married under that tree.
Oh.
And when the tree had to come down, he kept the wood and was waiting to find
smart.
The right place. So it's like,
boy, that is poetic.
Yep.
A big tip of the glass to Val Steinman, Brent Claussen, and Kat Scott of Heartwood Farm and Cidery. This is based about an hour southwest of Toronto in Erin, Ontario. You can find all the info and contact links to their website and more at ciderchat.com, episode 141. And if you happen to be in that area and able to make it out, let's see what the date here is. August 23rd. It's a Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. They're going to have an orchard picnic. And it's going to have some grass-fed beef from Chef Thornton's Roadhouse. There's going to be live music and, of course, cider. You know, it's always pouring there. It's pouring in the best way. And it's definitely worth your time and mine to make it there. They're also at different farmer markets. The Canadians are going, don't say it that way. Gulf? Shoot, I can't say it. Look, you're going to just have to go to their website and see it. The Gulf Farmer Market, Aaron's Farmer's Market, and Sorarin Market. That last one is in Toronto. So they're definitely out there and about selling their cider. So support your local farmers and orchardists today. And again, thank you, Ryan Monkman, Fieldbird Cider, for getting myself there, sponsoring this trip, and helping to share the beauty of Ontario and Ontario craft cider makers with the world. If you like this podcast, well, what are you waiting for? Become a patron today. All the information is at ciderchat.com. There's the most amazing people out there in Ciderville who are helping hold this podcast a bit, if you will. But I could use a bit more help, and it's been a while since I've had anyone sign up to become a patron. So perhaps that might be you. Again, you could just Google a Cider Chat Patreon page and find out the info right there, or go to ciderchat.com. Normandy, France is so close, I could almost taste it. Hope you are coming along on that tour, too. If not, go to the Totally Cider page at Cider Chat. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!